theories concerning the Antichrist fit in with that same doctrine. We'll be looking at a number of passages. The first one we'll be looking at, the first few passages, will be from the Epistle of 1 John. So if you want to follow along as I read tonight, you can take your Bible at this time and be turning to 1 John. And the first reference we'll look at is chapter 2 and verse 18. But before we read the passage, I want to just kind of, very short form, state the theory with regard to the Antichrist. There are among our religious friends those who believe in the coming of a personal Antichrist. That is, one particularly wicked person. And this person is to appear in the world sometime shortly before the second coming of Christ. He will be a ruler, maybe a secular ruler, or maybe a religious ruler. There'll be some differences with regard to that. He will arise in the world before the second coming of Christ, shortly before, but will not be revealed and will not be known until the rapture. As we talked about a few weeks ago, the theory is that the church will be raptured off this earth. And he will be here during the tribulation. He will make a covenant with the Jewish people. And then in the middle of the tribulation, that is in 3.5 years, he'll break that covenant and a war will break out. He'll have one war, perhaps, with an army from the north, supposed to be Russia. Some would not necessarily put that in their theory. And not all would put this part in their theory, but some would put in the theory that he will be the ruler over the revived Roman Empire, an empire of 10 nations that come out of the old Roman Empire, and he'll be the ruler of that. And then finally, at the coming of Christ, there will be the Battle of Armageddon, and Jesus then will defeat the Antichrist, or the man of sin. And that's just, of course, very briefly, just kind of stating some of the things that are involved in this. And what I want us to do tonight is just notice what the Bible actually has to say with regard to the Antichrist. And it happens that there's only one writer in the Bible that mentions the Antichrist. And that's the writer John. And there are really only 4 passages in the Bible that mention the Antichrist. And I'd like to just read at the outset, read those 4 passages. The first one, 1 John chapter 2 and verse 18. Little children, it is the last time. As you have heard that Antichrist shall come, even now are there many Antichrists, whereby we know that it is the last time. And then skip down to verse 22. Who is a liar? But he that denieth that Jesus is the Christ, he is Antichrist that denieth the Father and the Son. And then chapter 4, verses 2 and 3. Hereby know we the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesseth that Jesus is come in the flesh is of God. But every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of Antichrist, whereof ye have heard that it should come, and even now already is in the world. And then the last reference is in the little book of 2 John, just one chapter there, and it's verse 7. For many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. Now, having read those 4 passages, just would kind of make the statement for us to all understand. Once you understand those passages and have read them, and in their context, then you know all that there is to know about the Antichrist. Now, after that, there are many speculations and many theories, as I just kind of in the introduction mentioned those things, and you probably picked up that as I read those 4 passages, I didn't read anything like what I told you about people and their beliefs with regard to the personal Antichrist. That's all theory. That's all speculation on the part of men with regard to the coming of a personal Antichrist. Once you have read and studied these 4 passages and understand them, then you know all that any human being can know about the Antichrist, because this is all there is in the Word of God. These are the only passages that mention the Antichrist. And now with these four verses before us, I want to notice a thing or two which kind of contrasts with some of the theories that people have with regard to the Antichrist. The first thing I'd like to notice is that everybody talks about the Antichrist. And you would think from that that there's only one. But one of these passages lets us know that there are many Antichrists. Look again at chapter 2 and verse 18, and let me just read that passage again. Little children, it is the last time. And as ye have heard that Antichrist shall come, even now there are many Antichrists, whereby we know that it is the last time. So you notice the fact that he speaks of, in this verse at least, of the fact that there are many Antichrists. And so, and from some of the definitions and so forth that are given as look at those other verses, would indicate the same thing, but this verse is the clearest in letting us know that when John writes about the Antichrist, he's not talking about just one person, one wicked ruler, but he's talking about a group of people. And as he says here, there are many Antichrists. Then the second thing that I'd like for us to notice from these verses, and that's also contained here in verse 18, and that is that John is not talking about something yet future in the sense of something that we're now to look forward to just prior to the second coming of Christ. But John, is, as he writes about this, he's talking about something that's going on in his day and time. And so look again at verse 18, and he says, "You have heard that Antichrist shall come." And then he adds, it's already happening. "Even now, there are many Antichrists." And so John is writing about something that concerned the people of his day, Christians of his day. Something that was going on, had already started, and was going to be, of course, completed with regard to them. It has to do with the first century, not with the 21st, or however long it is, prior to the second coming of Christ. And then turn over to 1 John chapter 4 and verse 3. Let me read that again. "And every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come into the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of Antichrist, whereof ye have heard that it should come." And then notice how he ends the verse. "And even now already is in the world." So again, same lesson, of course, as in the other passage. John is not talking about something that he anticipates being 20 centuries or more away. But when John writes about the Antichrist, he's talking about something that was underfoot in his day. It hadn't quite reached its culmination, but it was already started. It was something of his day and for he and his fellow Christians then and there to deal with. And then the third thing about the Antichrist is found in chapter 2, and I read verse 18, but if we just continue, and Antichrist is mentioned in 18, but verse 19 tells us a little more about the Antichrist. The Antichrist referred to here are apostate Christians. We're not talking about world leaders, but we're talking about apostate Christians. Listen to verse 19. "They," referring back to the Antichrist, "they went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they had been of us, they would no doubt have continued with us. But they went out that they might be made manifest that they were not of us." And so what John is talking about is people who had been Christians, been a part of the church in his day. But they're apostates. They left. At the time he's writing this, they've already left. And he's writing when he talks of the Antichrist. He's talking about people who had come into the church, but then they denied their faith and had gone out, and they're the ones that he refers to as being Antichrist. And then from these passages, a fourth and a final thing that we want to notice just from these passages that have to do with the Antichrist, and that is exactly what makes an Antichrist, according to John. Well, let's look in chapter 2 of 1 John and verse 22. "Who is a liar? But he that denieth that Jesus is the Christ, he is Antichrist, that denieth the Father and the Son." John's not talking. There's nothing in any of these verses about some great political, wicked political leader or religious leader that's leading some type of military forces. But what John is talking about when he talks about Antichrist is what you would expect the word Antichrist to mean. Someone who spoke out against Christ. And that, of course, would be the literal meaning of the word Antichrist. And then he particularly defines it. It's the person that denies that Jesus is the Christ. Now, we, of course, use the expression Jesus Christ, and we use Jesus and Christ, we use it interchangeably in our talk because we're Christians, and that's what we believe. But you have to understand that the word Jesus was the personal name for Jesus. And the word Christ meant that He was the promised Messiah. And the Antichrist are those, John says, who deny that Jesus is really that promised Messiah. That's what an Antichrist is. And then he further develops that is a little bit more. He is Antichrist that denies the Father and the Son. That is, that God is the Father and that Jesus Christ is the Son. And so he's defining for us what he means by Antichrist. And he continues to do this in some of the other verses that are read. Let me read chapter 4, verse 3 again. And he further defines this. Every spirit that confesseth not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh is not of God. And this is that spirit of Antichrist, whereof you've heard and it's already in the world. The Antichrist, according to John, are the people that denied that what we would call the incarnation. That God became flesh. And then you see the same thing in that last passage that I read, the one from 2 John, verse 7, if you look at that again. For many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Jesus Christ is come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. So the antichrist, according to John, are those people who deny that that God came in the flesh, that Jesus Christ came in the flesh, and that Jesus is really the Son of God. The Antichrist, according to John, are those who denied the very basic Bible teachings about Jesus. And that's what an Antichrist is. And from the reading of the Scriptures, that's all it is. And that's all that you really, from the study of the Bible, that's all you can come up with. And you wouldn't refer to anybody today as an antichrist in the same sense that John is, unless you're talking to somebody who denies that God became flesh, or that Jesus is really the Christ, the Son of God. Something that has to do with the very basic nature and teaching about Jesus Christ. And that's an antichrist. And that's what you would expect the word antichrist to mean. And I would studying on this, thinking about this, and read the newspaper a little bit. And if I miss something, my wife will always point it out to me in the newspaper, so that way it keeps me informed. And I don't know how many of you have been following the articles and the letters to the editor about referring to Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons as cults. I assume most of us have seen some of that in the paper. And there's quite an uproar of calling them cults. And I read the response, and a couple of things I've said along that line. First thing, and why I don't agree with Mark Quartz on a lot of things, he's right on. First thing, that these particular groups and a few others have been defined as cults for people before you and I were born. Anybody. It goes way back. They've always been referred to as cults because their beliefs are so at variance with basic Christian beliefs. We disagree, but do not call Roman Catholics a cult. Protestants are not called a cult. The Pentecostal churches that came along are not referred to as cults. But there are some groups that are called cults and have been defined and been named cults for a long time. Why is that? You know, why would you not refer to a Roman Catholic or any Protestant that you disagreed with or any of the new churches that come along with your, why would you not call them cults, but you call certain others cults? Well, I wanted to mention that because it's very basic. It's really what is in this text. And I won't mention all of them, but the Jehovah's Witnesses, for example, as an example, they deny the basic teachings of the Bible about Jesus Christ. Now, we would disagree with the Roman Catholics. We'd disagree with many of our Protestant friends. But all what we might call standard religious groups have a basic belief about Jesus Christ. But the cults, generally at least, the ones that I'm talking about at least, do not. They have a different belief. And the Jehovah's Witnesses, in particular, question the deity of Christ. And they have their own translation of the Bible, called the New World Translation, which I have a copy of it in my office. And if you'll turn to John 1:1, a basic passage, you know, in the beginning was the Word, referring to Jesus. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Their translation would read something this age. In the beginning was the Word was with God, capital G, and the Word was a God, a stology, to show that they do not believe that Jesus is deity in the same sense that the Father is. And in a passage in Colossians chapter 1, where it talks about Jesus being the of all creation, it says in their text, they put it in italics because it's not in the original, but in their text, every other creature, meaning that Jesus himself is a creature or a created being. And so they're referred to as a cult because they deny a very basic tenet about the deity of Jesus Christ. And that's the way, that's at least in part at least, while they were referred to not as a denomination particularly, but as a cult. And this is I mention that because that's very similar to what we're looking at here. John, those that denied the basic things about Jesus, the basic teachings, he just referred to them as Antichrist. And that's the reason I thought I'd mention that, because there is the connection here, denying the basic teachings about Jesus. Well, people have, back to the idea of the Antichrist here, people have speculated. I've made a list here of some of the antichrists. Suppose this personal antichrist is supposed to come. The Roman emperors, some of the early Christians thought the Roman emperor was the antichrist. And then some thought Muhammad was. And the Roman Catholic Pope, not necessarily an individual pope, but the papacy, has been identified as the antichrist. Now, all the Protestant churches did that for several generations. And the Lutherans, who followed, of course, Martin Luther, they still, unless they've changed in recent years, but you know, up until at least recent times, and some of their major writers continue to interpret the Scriptures as this is a reference to the papacy. And then during Napoleon's day, people said it was Napoleon. And then it was the Kaiser. And then in World War II, it was Mussolini. And I'm not sure, did they say that Saddam Hussein, I think I heard that he was the Antichrist at the time. I've kind of forgotten, but I think that. So, and I mentioned all this, it started way back to the Roman emperors, just to show that what has been happening through the years, people have been looking into Scriptures, and then they've just been guessing, just speculating. And I mentioned all that just to show that, you know, we really don't know, and there's not anything in the Scriptures to suggest that there's one person coming, one wicked ruler, like Hitler or Mussolini or the Kaiser or whoever, that is the personal Antichrist. That's not what John is talking about. Now, I said I was going to talk about the Antichrist and the man of sin. So we're going to shift quickly now to 2 Thessalonians and read about the man of sin. These two subjects go together because it is believed that the Antichrist, those who follow these theories, they have the Antichrist and the man of sin, from 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 as being the same individual. And let me just read from 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And so you can see, of course, there in verse 3, the expression, the man of sin, also called the son of perdition. Now, people who follow the scheme about the coming of the Antichrist, they take those passages about the Antichrist that we've already looked at, and then they take this passage. And there are some others that we won't be dealing with tonight from the book of Revelation and from Daniel. But they take, these are the two basic ones. This is the one that mentions the man of sin. And they take this and they put them together. And so the first question is the man of sin here that I just read about and the Antichrist, is that talking about one and the same person? Well, the first answer is there's not any reason in the world to think so. There's not anything in the Bible that connects them. If you do connect them, it's purely guesswork or speculation. Because there's nothing said in John about the Antichrist and by Paul about the man of sin. There's nothing said about either one of those that would tie the two together. And the fact of the matter is, study what is said about the Antichrist and then what is said about the man of sin, you just get the impression that, well, this is two different things entirely. There is nothing, for example, we won't go into all the details, but there's nothing, for example, in Paul writing here about the man of sin, the son of perdition. There's nothing here in this text about that these are those people that deny that Jesus came in the flesh, that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. See, that was the main thing that John said. That's what made him an Antichrist. And you can read all that Paul has to say about the man of sin here, and you don't find that even hinted at. And so there's really no reason in the world to think that the Antichrist and the man of sin are supposed to be the same thing. John was writing about one thing, and Paul, here, a few years earlier, was writing about another thing in a totally different part of the world. And then another thing, though, on the man of sin, though, and since people want to make that the coming man of sin or Antichrist, whichever term they would use. But another thing is that this is something from Paul's day, though. And let me read a little further in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 5 through 7. Remember ye not that when I was with you, I told you these things, and now ye know what withholdeth that it might be revealed in his time. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until it be taken out of the way. Now that's Old English. If you're using the New King James, it'll be one who hinders or holds back. But the part I want you to really notice is the first part of verse 7. The mystery of iniquity does already work. Now he's talked about the man of sin in the preceding verses and warned about the man of sin. And he doesn't say, now this is something that's going to be 20 centuries from now or further. But he says it's already afoot. The mystery of iniquity is already at work. And so while John, when he mentions the Antichrist, and Paul, when he mentions the man of sin, obviously if you read and study both passages, they're not talking about the same thing. But they are both talking about something that was going on in their world, a little different time period, and in different part of the world. But they're talking about something that was afoot in their day and time, not something that was to be happening along about the time of the second coming of Christ. And so, I wanted to just mention those tonight in connection with some of the other theories that have been talked about on Sunday night, not because they're of any edification value to us, but because we rub shoulders with our religious neighbors. They talk about the Antichrist, and they talk about the rapture, and they talk about the tribulation. And TJ asked me if I had any songs to recommend for the sermon tonight, and I told him I didn't think there were any in our book, and I hope there were not, that would fit in with this lesson, because this is not really Bible teaching. I'm trying to show Bible teaching in contrast with some of the modern theories that you hear about in the religious world. Might be that there's a person here tonight who is not a Christian and needs to respond in some way to the invitation hymn. You need to believe, repent of your sins, confess your faith, and be baptized for the remission of sins. If you're here tonight and you've already studied that out and understand it and made your decision to become a Christian tonight, you can just come forward.